I was thinking about when we had that conversation with David Craig.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about how, like, you have to be to succeed in this. And you and I are both, like, so Gen X brand that, like, we fight against this. But you've got to be in collaboration with your audience. And I think like doing bonus episodes that is just us talking, like working through some stuff, like interacting with the audience, figuring out what they want in a more direct way, I think will be good. Because those, like, we've had some pretty wild audience interactions just in the last month or so, given all the things that we've been talking about. So I wanted to talk about some of that and, like, maybe just talk about work and just chat and just start to set the pace for what bonus episodes of the show have looked like. Because I know that we've struggled in the past.
Right.
To figure out exactly what we do here, because we're a guest-driven show. We have guests on. Yeah, exactly. Are you drinking? He's showing me rubbing alcohol and drinking it. Are you saying that you want to get a drink? or that you want to kill yourself with rubbing alcohol because this is too personal?
Actually, I think mostly I'd go blind first. That's what they always told me.
Mm-hmm. No, are you uncomfortable right now?
No, not at all. I just thought I could make you think I was.
So we've struggled in the past trying to figure out what we want to do for bonus episodes here, because we're a guest-driven show, and the reason guests go on podcasts is because they want to be heard by a wide audience. They don't want to be heard by the 100 or so super fans you've got.
Right.
And so I thought that, like, you know, responding to, you know, to consumer demand and actually talking and maybe peeling back the curtain, doing this kind of thing would be better. And I've got some other stuff, and I was thinking, like, this is a kind of thing that we could also get, like, Kevin and maybe Joe on, and we all just bullshit.
Sure.
About the job and, like, about the news stories and about things that are covered and undercovered. I had a very interesting conversation with Aram yesterday, that I will tell you about off air.
Okay.
Got his tacit agreement to also come on and do this kind of thing.
Oh yeah. Well, he's a lot of fun.
He'd be a lot of fun to just, that's it. That's what we're doing. It's just, I'm bullying you into having a conversation, with me, and then we're going to monetize it.
Monetize the fuck out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
That's the plan. Yeah.
So let me ask you, should we actually do video? Do people even know what we look like, and do they care?
Are we
saving them?
I think start small. I think we're quite handsome. Let's just get the audio out and let's let them tell us what they want.
That sounds good.
Because they're not shy. They're not shy about reaching out. Here's something. Someone subscribed and said because they want us to do a Fallout episode.
Love Fallout.
I love Fallout too. So we're going to do that next year. I'm going to figure out a way to do a two-parter for subscribers only that just covers the Fallout franchise. I have some ideas. I may be able to get something like the original heads. So I've got some of their contact information, like the people that designed the original games.
Well, and it's perfect timing with the TV series coming out.
With the TV series coming out,
although,
exactly.
I'm not sure I can picture the TV series. I mean, and that's after seeing pictures of what the TV series is going to look like.
Did you see the trailer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not excited?
I just have my doubts, that's all.
When did you start? Everyone has their doubts. What was your first Fallout game?
I guess it would be the first that was actually a shooter.
The Xbox one, Fallout 3.
Mm-hmm.
When?
Yep.
So, I mean, you want to hear... This is very nerdy shit that I'm about to drop on you. Do you know about the East Coast, West Coast Fallout theory?
No.
Okay, so Fallout 1 and 2 and New Vegas are all... That's like the original team of people that make the Fallout games. It's the original kind of like Fallout feel. And they are all set on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
They're all the West Coast Fallouts. The Bethesda Fallouts, Fallout 3, Fallout 4, Fallout 76, are the ones that are more shootery driven, more action-y. And more about like vibing in a post-apocalyptic world, a little bit less story driven. Those are the East Coast Fallouts. And they have very different feels. And you, like if you're too into the Fallout world and too into the lore, a lot of like the story contradicts, like stuff doesn't make sense. So, there's a lot of fans have a headcanon where they're almost two different worlds, where it's, there's the East Coast Fallout and a West Coast Fallout. And they've got kind of two different, there's like almost two different pieces of the multiverse, right?
Yeah.
In which Fallout exists.
What really they share is an aesthetic. I mean, is that kind of
like,
it?
Yeah, mainly what they share is an aesthetic, right? The show is Los Angeles. So even though Bethesda is apparently like greatly, extremely involved, it is not an East Coast Fallout, it is a West Coast Fallout. And what does that mean? those are the kinds of things that I'm asking myself as the television show barrels towards us next year.
I'm trying to think. New Vegas was fantastic. I really loved and now appreciate far more the one set here in Washington, D.C. I mean, wow, did they get the city right? And wow, did they explore some fascinating parts of it? I mean, just terrific.
I think that's like the of the East Coast Fallouts, I think their strength is world design and environmental storytelling. Like that's a very beautiful, not beautiful, but it's a very clear rendition of DC, right?
Yeah, it really is.
And like, I know people malign Fallout 76, but I really like, it is so perfectly captures the American, like it so perfectly captures West Virginia. And like the feel of it and, the environments are just gorgeous and wonderful. And the story is not, well, actually I would even defend the story, but maybe that I'll save that for the actual Fallout podcast that we do later, but, it's fun. It's like a good place to vibe in. It feels good to be in there and interacting in that zone. And I think they capture it really well. Whereas like New Vegas, its environments are almost perfunctory. It's like what they need to be. And it's a desert. So there's like only so much, I think, you can do with the graphic capabilities at the time, but the story, right. And the ideas and like this ideological battle, between like Caesar's Legion and, you know, the NCR and the and Mr. House and like all that stuff is like, that's where the meat of that game is. That's where the good stuff is there.
Yeah. I'm actually, it's so funny. I remember wandering around the landscape in the desert, desperately trying to get to Caesar's camp. And this was early in the game, so I hadn't unlocked Caesar's camp, but it was on the damn map.
I think you probably could have gotten there. It would have been very difficult. There would have been a bunch of nasty stuff in your way, but
there was actually, it was like walking up to a glass wall and it literally wouldn't let me walk any further. And, I was so annoyed because I feel like you should be able to do that stuff out of turn.
Yeah. And New Vegas is kind of famous for allowing you to do that kind of stuff out of turn if you can. You know? But I don't want to sit here and talk about Fallout the whole time. But it's good fodder. It's a good starting thing. It's not a bad idea. We'll do that.
Okay.
RM has a project that I'll talk to you about when we're not talking in front of other people.
Okay.
That I think will be good for us next year. And then just in general, you know, and the other thing was like, it's December 14th and you know what it's like in that city to try to get anyone to do anything in this job for like the next month or so. It's just, no one's going to be around. No one's going to be anywhere. It's right. True. So it's a good time to like assess and have conversations and just relax.
What I sort of wonder if people understand about the show, and it deals right with this. It's like, we actually manage somehow to put out a show pretty much every week.
Yeah.
I mean, we take very few breaks every year. And I mean, that's kind of amazing. I mean, simply like we scramble around. And we've we've been able to pull it off.
Well, we both have full-time jobs on the side, you know.
Right, exactly. And as well as other side gigs, in addition to the full-time jobs. But, I mean, it's obviously it's something we love doing, so we do it. But, yeah, I wonder sometimes if people think, oh, they must have producers or someone's editing the audio. And nope.
It's all us. And like basically the workflow of the way the show works is that you, I, or Kevin have an idea. And there's a lot of really great ideas that do come from Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting on a stack of them right now. And Kevin, I will get to them, I promise. It's just that nobody wants to come on the show in December. And then like, yeah, one of us books with the guest, which is a bigger job than I think sometimes people realize.
Mm-hmm.
Like doing the secretarial work of like scheduling stuff with somebody. I know it sounds a little ridiculous, but when we first started doing this like 7 or 8 years ago, I was doing a lot of that. And it shocked me how big a job it is just to like book guests and get them on and have them know what to expect. And then, yeah, you or I edit the audio of the show together. And like, that's not a small task. It doesn't always go well, which we'll talk about too in a second. But yeah, it's like, it's a labor of love between us to get this thing out. Yeah. And yeah, we've been doing it pretty consistently for 8 years and a lot of podcasts don't. It's like, if you can go more than 6 episodes, usually most podcasts die almost immediately, right? So
yeah.
We've been doing it this long and this fairly consistently is a testament. And there's a lot of episodes I'm proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's pretty funny though, because also when you told people 8 years ago you had a podcast, they were like, mm-hmm. Really? A podcast? Sounds exotic. Yeah. And now you tell people you have a podcast and they just think you're masturbating.
Yes. Oh yeah. 100%. Right? No, but like everybody, it's a joke on SNL now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every white guy with a beard, which we both are, has a bad podcast they're doing in their basement.
Yep. I am actually in my basement. So that unfortunately is also true. Matthew actually sits above ground. I think it's
important to note. I do. We don't build no basements around these parts. So I wanted like kind of piggybacking off of that. Another thing I've been thinking about, and it's kind of these twin impulses of, I'm trying to think of how to even approach this. Cause there's like these two, there's like, I want things to go faster, but I also want things to be of higher quality. Let me take it from this direction. So like we both work in a blog business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's in blogging, is a volume business. Like True. There's journalism, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's all, but the, like, I would say that like as an opinion editor or me over at, I'm lucky if I get to do journalism at Vice. A lot of what I'm doing is just like feeding the SEO beast, right? Just churning through. And that's a volume business. So you get used to this idea of just get things out, you know, just pump it out, just get it out, get the takes from the take machine and get them out there into the world, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like tired of that too. And I want to like take a little bit better time on things and like for things to be a little bit higher quality. Like thinking about, did you listen to the Tom Clancy episode?
Yes. Yes, I did. I am a loyal listener as well as a host.
His audio quality was terrible and it didn't have to be.
Yeah.
Like, and all it would have taken was a little bit more time and a little bit more, like I could have fixed that problem before it was a problem. But I was rushing.
Yeah.
and so we released something with audio quality that I'm not happy with. And I don't want to do that anymore.
Okay.
At the same time, I'll read a fan email. This was actually a Twitter DM from, Judah, and he gave me permission to publish it. So I did ask So he DM'd me on Twitter, twisting my mic a little bit here. All right. We follow each other on this hell site, but you don't know me. I'm a longtime listener of Angry Planet / War College, I believe from episode one. I'm profoundly disappointed that you only just released that episode with 404 Media, AI and Propaganda in the Israel Hamas War, which was recorded on October 10th. It includes much information that is simply not up to date and gives a false impression of what did and did not happen on October 7th, particularly about Israeli children being murdered and mutilated. If you had released closer to the date it had been recorded, it would have been more accurately indicated what official sources were prepared to say publicly. But it has been weeks since then, and more first responders have come forward and spoken about the horrors that they had seen and what has been documented. And as a result of releasing this weeks after it was recorded, it gives a false impression that there is a debate about whether Israeli children and babies were murdered and mutilated when those horrors are well documented. I have to imagine there was a way of including this genuinely interesting discussion about the general AI propaganda aspects of this conflict without including that section, which was simply outdated. And he's right.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
And I told him that he was right.
Yeah.
And I want to, so like, I've got these twin impulses where like, I both want to take it a little bit slower and make sure that we're producing something of quality, while also making sure that when we've got something like that, that needs to be out like the next day, we're doing that. And my only solution is that we're just going to have to work a little bit harder.
Well, that makes sense. It also, you know, we have tried to keep up that weekly drumbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether that's necessary at this point. I mean, are we as well off having in that week? I think we had already had three in episodes in the can.
Yeah.
Should we have just put out all three? And then, because then would we have had the capacity to do two more in the following weeks?
I think the answer was we should have put those out like mm-hmm. a day, like maybe a day and a half apart.
Yeah.
And then just not published anything for a while.
Yeah.
Unless we were responding to something immediately, right?
Yeah. You know, what's funny though, is I think both of us have, I mean, real honest to God news backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's just that feeling that, you know, things have to go out. I mean, you can't not publish a newspaper. I mean, I always complain about how old I am, but I mean, the fact is like, I actually did start off in newspapers, print newspapers, and didn't matter what really was in the news that day, you were going to publish a newspaper. And so it just feels weird leaving a week blank where no one hears from us, you know, and even though the same amount of overall work is being done.
Yeah, it really does. And I think we've almost, I mean, there's been a couple off weeks, but we've hit every week, I think, since almost every week since we started this thing, even like we even put out reruns.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, in most places, you know, unless you're either news, like official mm-hmm. news, and or you have a production staff, people run 12 episode seasons, and then they disappear for a year to record 12 more episodes, and they come back to you. That's not what the show is. People take seasons, and they say, we're doing, I mean, really, 12 episodes is a long season. And then they have long breaks where they do the preparatory work for the next season. And if they're going to have interviews, they do those interviews. If they're, you know, they are producing a program rather than actually just we run shows. And I think that's actually, it's a big difference. I don't know. I don't think people want us to go away like 30 weeks out of the year.
No, I think they want... like people want a Kissinger episode and I want to do a Kissinger episode. Right.
Yep.
Like people do want us responding to the news cycle. I think that is true. People want like a weekly podcast. That's my, and please tell me if we're wrong. That's one of the reasons we're doing the episode. please reach out and tell us, and we'll tweak it. We'll change.
I can change, cats, baby. I can change. Yeah,
cats are fighting behind me. Sorry. Hold on. This has been one of the more chaotic recording sessions. amusingly. Usually when we have guests, everyone's the cats and the phones are well more behaved.
Yeah, but I mean, is that part of the personality people are missing? Right?
I think so.
I mean, like a little bit of a little bit of cat every once in a while might actually be a plus.
A little bit of cat every once in a while, a little bit of like some peeks behind the curtain. So speaking of that, I wondered if we could also go into some other, most of the reader response stuff is all about Israel, right?
Shocking. That's never been the case before in the history of news.
And I wondered if I could go through some more of that.
Sure.
Let's see here. There's one we got. Did you see the angry, I'm trying to find it. There was an angry message on Facebook from a guy who deleted he stopped his subscription.
Fair enough.
Did you happen to see this?
No.
Here we go. All right. I won't share his name, but I thought we could respond to this. Because I do think it's I do want to kind of talk about the meta level of the way we cover this stuff. Anyway, mm-hmm. Dear Matthew and Jason, I was your avid listener since 2015. Your fresh view on events was always interesting and engaging until now, that is. I happen to live in Israel, in a city that is bombed twice a day. Being realistic, I do not expect much sympathy from the enlightened Americans. Still, based on my previous experience with you, I was hoping for an unconventional point of view. Instead, more of murdered children in the siege of Gaza followed, based on common knowledge of these evil Israeli deeds. Here's some topics you could have discussed instead. Gaza has a border with Egypt. What are their reasons for keeping the siege? Why has no one ever called out Egypt and only blamed Israel? And I think we did, in fact, talk about Egypt being responsible specifically with Stephen Cook, right?
Yes.
Geography lesson. The distance between Tel Aviv and Gaza is a 2-hour drive. Israel has no rear safe areas at all. This elevates a barbaric attack like that of 10/7 to an existential threat level. After all, nobody will live their normal life with such a threat looming. Stopping the war before Hamas is rooted out is an end of Israel. I don't think either one of us called for
a ceasefire. We didn't even call for a ceasefire.
No. And I do understand how small that area is. You've obviously been there multiple times.
I have, yeah. They have a large number of family there.
So like for you, it is personal, mm-hmm. right? What is the responsibility of donors that poured close to $1 billion into Gaza that were used to educate a generation of savages, arm them and build military infrastructure instead of livelihood? Did US, Qatar, and EU know? It's actually, foreign aid to Gaza and what it's used for and the its appropriation by Hamas, I think, is actually a pretty interesting topic mm-hmm. that almost demands its own episode. Because there is like a lot of international groups have poured money into the region and time. What has happened to it? But also, I think like the people around Gaza make it pretty hard too. For the region to get better or be built up. But again, blah, 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 blah. But then forget it. Better to do one more episode on whether the babies were really beheaded or is it Zionist propaganda altogether. You'll get much more listeners by following that trend. We do live in a post-truth relativistic world. To think that the nation once fought Nazis and the Imperial Japanese. So long, and thanks for what you've produced till now.
Well, I mean, I appreciate how angry the person is. And I have no doubt that they have good reason to be that angry. I would also suggest that they listened to the shows with their angry ears, not their actual ears.
We cannot mention
every aspect. I mean, we did not get into the fact that the Palestinian Authority actually supports people who kill Jews in Israel when they're put in prison. Their families are given money. I mean, mm-hmm. they have special awards for that. They do have these horrible schools where, you know, little babies dress up as commandos and, quote, kill Israelis, you know. Yeah, there's more horrible shit out there. I mean, we're not going to be able to get to it all, nor do we want to be a place that is just simply an incitement. We want to actually try to get a little bit from both sides, which is hard to be honest, for me, I don't necessarily want to hear the other side either, but that doesn't mean I can turn myself away from it.
And also, we're not a debate show.
No.
That's not the point of the show. We don't have guests on to aggressively interrogate them about a subject and fight with them about it, right?
I don't know how we're going to, especially on Israel and Palestinians, we're going to make everybody happy.
You can't. You can't at all. And like, I think it's been really interesting to watch. The audience has been more engaged with us over this topic than I think any other topic we've ever done in like the past 8 years. Some of it helpful, some of it not helpful. All of it pretty interesting though.
Yeah, but I'm glad to have people engaged. Honestly, mm-hmm. One of the things that has always been strange to me about our show is how little feedback we get.
Because we don't.
For the number of listeners that we have.
We don't open our, I think it's because we don't make ourselves available and we don't open ourselves up to it. There's mm-hmm. no, like we're terrible at social media.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely terrible at it. When we do post things, we do get comments, like people respond, people do send us DMs, but there's no central repository of like, there's no place where the Angry Planet fans can like hang out and like just ping us with things. And maybe there should be. So this was another thing I was going to bring up, and this is, again, I'll kick this to the audience and they will tell us if they want me to build this. And if I get a positive response from this question, I'll do it. And I'll do it like tomorrow, or, you know, however soon we get this episode out. Discord, I'll make a Discord server. I don't know how old our subscribers are, if they know what Discord is or if they know how to use it. Which is also probably another problem. It's like, I'm not really sure of the demographics of the people that are subscribing. Let's find out. I can make a Discord server, and that'll be a place for people to post bad memes, and yell at us and give us story suggestions, and for us to get more immediate feedback and kind of feedback into this loop of like, we'll read more listener mail and messages in these episodes. We will discuss the topics that you bring to us, and we'll figure out like what other episodes we want to do on the mainline show. So like the mainline show, I think, is always going to be like us and a guest working through a specific topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll find the Kissinger thing. Kevin's got a great idea for an episode about like what proxy conflict actually means. We're working on stuff. But I think that like one of the things that these episodes can be, these bonuses, and this is one that will never go out to the general public. that's the other thing, is like, I want to design this space in such a way, because all in the past we've done bonus episodes and then like released them later.
Yeah.
No more of that. This is the private space for us to have a conversation with the listeners and like hash some things out and just like catch up, have conversations. We'll probably, I'll like excerpt like 10 minutes of it or something, and we'll throw it up on the main feed just to like try to bring more people in. But other than that, this is going to be, this is like a sacrosanct space. You gotta get to the Substack if you want to listen to this and be a part of this conversation. So that's why I think we don't have as much feedback, is because we don't make ourselves available to it. And that's part of what this is about, is making ourselves more available to it and more approachable, doing the shit we should have been doing for the past 7 years. Do you know that Bethel is on This American Life now? She's like one of their producers. Isn't that amazing?
Yes. And for people who don't know, she was our producer at Reuters, and she is brilliant.
She's so good. Like every time I would spend, anytime I would spend like just an hour with her working on anything, I would learn so much.
Yeah.
Just instantaneously. I'm really happy that she's on This American Life. It's a pleasure to hear her name mentioned, in every episode. I didn't know anything about Eritrea until she pushed us to do an Eritrea episode.
Yeah.
Really
interesting.
Which was a super
interesting episode.
Yeah, it's like a super fascinating episode.
Well, I mean, you know, we've also asked over the years for show ideas,
mm-hmm.
and You know, the Fallout one is a terrific idea. And I think I would love to hear more, too. I mean, because you might be surprised who we can get.
Yeah, I think it'd be we float around in some rarefied circles, and I think you'd be surprised at our capabilities of landing some guests.
Yeah, and we are happy to really reach out. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, but it's really good to know what you guys want. I mean, that helps us to figure it all out.
This is something I was talking about with Aurum yesterday, actually, was about, like, one of the reasons I like doing the show, and one of the things I think that we do well is that, and one of the reasons, like, I bristle a little bit when we get emails like we got from, like, the angry message we got from the gentleman that lives in Israel, is that I think a lot of coverage of conflict comes in like two different flavors, and I find them both like repugnant. And one is the like extreme nationalist, and nationalist, I use broadly depending on like where that specific media is produced, like a right wing kind of take. And the other is like the extreme left wing. America is the prime mover in any situation, and is it evil, left wing kind of thing. And there's not, like, I don't want to say that we're centrist. I would like to think of us as sensible, and come at topics with a more nuanced point of view, and one that is like, there's a lot going on here, and there's a lot of actors in any given conflict. And they've all got their individual motivations. Everything is not just America and the CIA set up X, Y, or Z. And that's why this is happening, which I think is like a default position by a lot of people in the podcast space, especially. It has been very egregious and annoying in the era of this, of the Israel Hamas war. It's like that shit has gotten like really bad. It's like, why do I give a shit that Detroit passed a resolution calling for a ceasefire? Like, did anyone ask, did anyone in Detroit ask Israel and Hamas what they thought of the ceasefire? No. Anyway. So I think that that's like one of the things that the show does. And one of the reasons I love to do it is like, there's not a lot of stuff out here like this. And most of it is bad. Or like, I have to really go in. Like, you always need to know what the biases are of the people that are hosting the show, right? But like, a lot of times I have to hold my nose when I'm engaging with other people that do what we do in other spaces. Certainly not always. There's a lot of lovely people who I think are wonderful, but I don't know. I just don't find that there's a lot of people with our point of view doing this and covering this topic.
No, I agree. I think also, one of the main reasons why I like to do the show, why I continue to do the show, is because I'm genuinely curious about the various things we talk to people about. You know, I mean, it's not like, in law that they always say, don't cross-examine anyone or ask them a question that you don't already know the answer to.
Mm-hmm.
And for this, that's kind of the exact opposite. I mean, I actually want to find out stuff that I don't know. I mean, we could have shows like this all the time where I mouth off, but you know, we'd have an audience of one, and it wouldn't even be my wife. I mean, that's the sad part.
Yeah. Cause she has to hear it all the time. Right.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Why would she want to sit in the car and listen to you? Like, coming over the radio and right next to her. Terrible.
That is too much. That is too much.
What are you, so can you talk about some of the stuff you're working on that's not Newsweeky? So I know you were excited about some of it.
Well, yeah. I actually just wrote a piece for something called The Forward, which some people will know, but I'm going to guess a lot of people don't. It's actually a specifically Jewish publication. It's been around for over 100 years. It's the kind of thing, actually, it's way older than that. And it started off being socialist and in Yiddish, So, you know,
when was it founded?
Oh God, I think
it's like
18
like,
something.
Like, what did socialism mean when it was founded? Because it doesn't mean the same thing now, right?
Right. I think it was like Debs, Eugene Debs, who was running for president.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that kind of socialism.
Gotcha. Okay. So, like, real old school worker party.
Yeah.
Socialism. Got it. Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it's fun to try to branch out a little bit and to do more writing. Yeah. Oh, here, I just found one. It's first published April
22, 1897. Nice.
Okay. Yeah. So it's nice to do something that actually deals some specifically with my identity.
Mm-hmm.
And writing about something.
Wait, what did you write about?
Well, Matthew. Now, what I wrote about is what's going on at the various colleges around the country. But I was taking the point of view, and I hope this actually becomes a column, like a regular column. That's what I was talking to the editor about. But there's an old thing in Jewish circles, you know, it's sort of a saying or a question, you know. Good for the Jews. And you can apply that to virtually anything, like high unemployment. Is that good for the Jews? You know, but in this case, the question really is being at the forefront of so much of the conversation going on in this country, is that by itself a good thing? And I argue that it actually isn't. I mean, it's a lose-lose situation. You know, if people think that Jews control the media, well, having a lot of media talking about Jews doesn't help. You know, especially saying that anti-Semitism is bad. I mean, who would want that? I mean, progressives and, Jews. I don't know. So, you know, basically, yeah, it's how do you balance being a people who are in some sense like never at home?
Yeah.
So that's basically it. All in 900 words. Amazing.
Do you know how well, if it's been well received, are you cooking up another one?
Yeah. I definitely am. I mean, and I think actually looking at the war as it's being fought, and how that affects the overall Jewish people, because we don't all live in Israel. Mm-hmm. We don't all like Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's also important that, like, you can like one part of Israel, but not necessarily another part.
Oh, sure. Right? Absolutely. Right. And then, but I mean, it's a weird time right now where just in Washington, D.C., which is pretty liberal, I mean, as far as the overall title, you know, of what the city is, at one of my kids' high schools, they are trying desperately to show this violently anti-Semitic movie, which is read by, narrated by Roger Waters of Pink Floyd.
Oh, Jesus. What's the movie?
It's basically, it tells the story of a meeting, a secret meeting where the Jews were able to take over the media.
And okay. Why are they trying to show this at a...
It's the Arab Student Union.
Okay.
And that's distressing, unpleasant, all that. They finally were kicked off campus. Now they're showing it at a public library just a few blocks away. And it's just sort of like, well, what do you do with that? I mean, you know, there was not something that precipitated this other than a war that was happening thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is being shown in classrooms in the United States in the United States of America. And most of us here in the United States of America didn't actually drop a single bomb. So if that's what you're mad about, I don't see how that, you know, you could make the argument, it's not me.
Sorry, I'm looking this documentary up because I'm kind of, I mean, he's just like Pink Floyd, great. Roger Waters, insane.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But Pink Floyd, boy, I really love Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd is great, but he's like we don't need every deranged anti-Semitic thought that comes out of like aging rock stars, right?
Yeah.
Like there's no reason for us to look at any of that. There's no reason for me to care what Roger Waters thinks about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like if you're we have this terrible habit in this country of like looking towards celebrities for answers that they're not equipped to give.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
That sucks. I'm sorry. That's all.
No, it's okay. But it gives me my next column, so I'll take that. But that's part of what's so strange right now and why there are a lot of people who I know who are just distinctly uncomfortable, unhappy. I mean, I can't tell you how many gatherings I've been to where people are like, "How you holding up?" And I'm like, "What do you mean? How am I live in America?" You know, no one's bombing my ass, but apparently, you know, there are people coming for me anyway.
That's always kind of like, I mean, that's the stress of not having a home, mm-hmm. right? Not being comfortable in somewhere ever.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what's it like for you? How have you been like enjoying the war?
I'm like all good Americans who don't live in, centers of coastal power, like completely removed from it and can look at it a little bit more objectively. It's not, you know, I've never been to Israel. I'm not Jewish. So I cover it. It's I would say that like, it is interesting to be in a extreme, what I would call an extremely liberal progressive newsroom. Because I do get to, I'm probably the most conservative person in that newsroom, unless there's others hiding that I'm not aware of. But I do have to push back on, you know, I will write a story about X, Y, or Z, and I have to fight over phrasing of certain things. I guess this is a safe space, right? So like, sure. They didn't want to call it the Israel Hamas war. One of the editors was arguing that we call it, the Israeli genocide of the Palestinians, which was like, I'm not calling it that. Oh. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm simply not going to put my name on something. Like, I'm just not going to do it, you know? There's that one, there's a lot of pushback about like even calling it a war, which I find very strange.
Well, I mean, people think it's just so completely uneven, so one-sided, which you could tell to the dozens of Jewish soldiers who've been killed, you know, in this war.
They're to a certain extent, like, I mean, yeah, there's dozens of Jewish soldiers, but like, I understand that there is a power imbalance here.
Yeah.
Right. And that power imbalance does color like how people think about things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also just not going to like, I do not go in for this binary thinking about things. I just do not. And if there's any conflict, all conflicts have resonances and nuances that should be considered and understood, and like, goddamn, if this isn't one that you really got to understand like thousands of years of history to even begin to like grapple with any of it, right? And so I'm not interested in scoring points and making sure like my political priors are known going into a story about a protest or how this is a good example, how cell phones are used in Gaza was a story I did, that they assigned to me. And it was funny cause they thought of it as a feel good story. And I, got something closer to the truth, and it's a feel bad story. So, you know, it's really hard to like use a cell phone in Gaza, because their infrastructure is really poor. They can't like roam into Egypt or roam into Israel if you have a SIM card that is registered in Gaza. So, one of the ways that they get around this is there's a new thing called eSIMs, which are just like, like a digital SIM card, right?
Mm-hmm.
And more and more, we're going to be going that way, for a lot of different economic reasons. But so a thing that people were doing were there was like people in Egypt that were, setting up, charities, and like, they would get like thousands and thousands of digital SIM cards, get them into Gaza so that people could like remain connected and be on the internet, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, sounds good. Everyone needs communication in a war. Lots of civilians need to know where to not be or where to be, right? And it's like, at first blush, it's this thing about like these people all over the Arab world are gathering together and getting something important into Gaza to help people out there. But you have to have a newer phone to use it, first of all. And even if you do get, you have to be on the internet to register the eSIM. So you've got like, you know, a 5-minute window of terrible connection once a week to even be able to get on the internet to use it, to register this eSIM. And then once you do have the eSIM, you still have to be near one of the borders to get into either an Israeli tower or an Egyptian tower. So it's like, it's not a solution at all. Really, it's nice that people are doing this thing and shipping the stuff over there, but like all of the underlying problems still remain. So like this story that at first blush feels like it's about this charity and this nice thing that's being done is like way more complicated, and more nuanced, and you know, just like that. And that's what I'm interested in doing, right? Is like actually trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make people feel good. It's like my whole MO is bringing everyone down with, with a shot of truth.
Thank you. Thank you for the work you do.
So like, you know, a lucky week I do that, or I have a day like today where, I write 2 600-word articles about the trailer for a movie that's coming out next year. But also that's like a very December job assignment, right?
Yes, it is.
It's like a very December job assignment.
Yeah. I always really enjoy the end of the year countdowns that start mm-hmm. in November.
Yeah.
There are only so many months in the year, and I believe December is one of them.
Yeah, but is like a movie going to come out in December that's not going to be on the best list?
I don't know.
Actually, a lot of movies come out in December that are like award bait things.
Sure. And also events happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, top news stories of the year.
It's Thanksgiving. Stuff could happen in the next 30 days.
It really could. I mean, I know, you know, you're trying to sell Christmas trees, but come on.
How do you feel about this?
I feel like I really hope people will enjoy it. I hope that people get something out of it. I really am looking forward to feedback.
Yeah.
More than anything, you know? I mean, you always have the confidence in yourself that, okay, this was a good show. Or mm-hmm. sometimes you say, okay, well, that could have been better. But it's not the same thing as actually, you know, having some interaction. So I love the idea of actually having people talking back at us.
Yeah.
You know,
we gotta,
they think.
Gotta, you know, do the things that we should have been doing. All right. This is where I would hit a button to play music to see us out, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, da 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 da.
Do 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 do.